Okay, we'll start, and if Commissioner Seha makes it, then she can sit in for the rest of here. Good afternoon, welcome to the May 28th Orange County Planning Commission hearing. We'll start out with the Pledge of Allegiance. Commissioner Rice, would you lead us?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We'll do a roll call for the record, Second District. Commissioner Seha is not here. She's supposed to be here, so we'll see if she's gonna make it. Third District, Commissioner Rice.
Present.
Fourth District, Commissioner Kuz.
Present.
Fifth District, Commissioner Bartlett.
Here.
And I'm First District, Commissioner Ha. I think the first item on the agenda is to approve the consent item is the minutes of April 23rd, 2025. Do I get a motion?
Just a clarification. It says the minutes of April 23rd, but under the consent items, it says minutes of March 26th. Which one are you?
Well, on my consent, on my agenda, it said minutes of April 23rd.
April 23rd at the top. Down under consent items number one, it says March 26th.
If I may offer a clarification, I believe that's the minutes that were approved for the prior.
We don't care.
Yeah, got it. Motion for approval.
He's new, everybody.
Yeah, clarification.
Okay, we do have a second, so all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. You got me there for a second.
Yeah, me too. I got myself.
Okay. Oh, by the way, for the records, I think we got County Council Stephanie Clark sitting in for Nicole Walsh for a couple hearings.
That's correct. I will be here at this meeting, and I believe the next one as well.
Okay, well, welcome. Thank you. All right, Executive Officer, would you like to introduce the first item on the agenda, please?
Thank you, Chairman. The first item is a public hearing regarding General Plan Amendment S19-01 Safety Element. The applicant is OC Development Services, and this is affecting all unincorporated areas of Orange County, inclusive of all supervisory districts. We have Virginia Gomez, Senior Planner, presenting on behalf of staff.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Thank you very much for being here today. The item before you today is a request to recommend approval to the Board of Supervisors adoption of General Plan Amendment S-1901 for the safety element. The Planning Commission authorized the initiation of General Plan Amendment on October 23rd, 2019. The safety element is part of the existing Orange County General Plan, and in accordance with Senate Bill 1241, the county has updated the safety element to comply with the new state regulations regarding fire safety. The update to the safety element is in conjunction with the recently updated and adopted housing ordinance. Orange County Public Works Plan works with the Orange County Fire Authority, the Orange County Sheriff's Department, and the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection on the proposed changes to the safety element. The proposed changes to the safety element include updated fire hazard severity zone maps from the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection. Senate Bill 63 requires that all jurisdictions adopt by ordinance the new updated fire hazard severity zone maps released in March of 2025. The fire hazard severity zone map is included as part of this updated safety element. In addition, here's a picture of one of the new maps included in the updated safety element. It shows fire severity zones with the location of OC Sheriff Department, Sheriff Department stations and Orange County Fire Authority stations serving the unincorporated areas. This is among, four new maps that have been included in the safety element. ready to go. Other proposed revisions included in the safety element are the addition of historical data on wildfires in Orange County from 2013 through 2024, new and updated goals and policies that protect county communities from fire risk, policies like the county coordinating with OC Fire Authority on such issues as evacuation routes or fire safety standards or design requirements for new development in fire severity zones. Other technical revisions are also proposed, such as references to any safety, fire safety plans, or other documents adopted by county for fire risk reduction. Chief Louise, sorry. On April 11, 2025, the proposed safety element was submitted for review and approval to the California Board of Forestry and Fire Protection Resources Protection Committee to determine if the revised safety element meets those safety, fire safety planning requirements. The committee approved the Orange County safety element with two minor revisions on May 13, 2025. Those revisions included a quick update to the name of an agency and clarification regarding the applicability of a policy to certain development types. No further changes were required. Therefore, staff is requesting that the Planning Commission receive the staff report and any public testimony, recommend to the Board of Supervisors adoption of the CEQA finding, and recommend to the Board adoption of General Plan Amendment S-1901 to update the county's safety. This concludes my presentation of the General Plan Amendment S-1901. Staff is available to answer any questions the Commission may have.
Thank you. Before we go to the public, Commissioner, any comments?
One quick comment. How often are these fire zone maps updated?
I want to say it's every 3 years in advance of the fire code and building code updates.
Okay, so these designations will be in place for probably 3 years or so.
Oh, if not longer. They typically don't remove or eliminate areas, but add areas to these maps.
Okay, all right, thank you.
So let me follow up on that. So when was the last time it got updated?
I think it was in 2022, as part of the 2023 triannual code update.
I think about 3 years or so, depends, I guess.
Yeah.
Any other comments? Okay, we'll open the public comment session. Any members of the public that want to talk to us, please come up. I see none, so we'll close the public comment session. Are we ready for a motion? Anybody want to make a motion?
I'll make a motion to recommend to the County Board of Supervisors to approve the safety element of the general plan.
Do I have a second?
No second.
Okay, we got a second coming from Commissioner Rice. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, so we got 4-0 with Commissioner Seha being absent. Executive Officer, please introduce a second item.
Before we move on from that item, if we could perhaps have the motion also include the CEQA findings.
I amend my motion to include the CEQA findings as stated by the Director.
I'll include that in a second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Thank you for the correction. Would you like to introduce item number two, please?
As I did the first time, because I have a client in the energy services space, I'm going to recuse myself from this item.
Okay, noted.
Item number two is the second study session for General Plan Amendment 24-03 and Zoning Code Amendment 24-03, for battery energy storage systems. The applicant is OC Development Services. Again, location is all unincorporated areas of Orange County and inclusive of all supervisory districts. And Scarlett Dugan will be providing a staff presentation on this item.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Today I'm here to present the draft proposed zoning code amendment text for BESS facilities, which is inclusive of your feedback from the last study session in March. The goal of this second study session is to gain additional feedback from the Planning Commission now that we have a first draft of the proposed zoning code amendment text. So how did we arrive at the draft proposed zoning code amendment text? First, let's review who we actually consulted with. To gain initial feedback, staff met with groups who have experience with BESS facilities, such as the Orange County Fire Authority, who reviews BESS facilities to ensure compliance with the adopted fire code, key energy stakeholders such as Southern California Edison and San Diego Gas and Electric, who are operators of substations where many of existing BESS facilities are co-located with substations, private developers who have contracted with investor-owned utilities such as SCE to develop BESS facilities that are connected to existing substations. And we've also met with labor unions who have experience in construction of these types of facilities. Next, we will review what we considered when we were drafting the proposed preliminary zoning code amendment text. As staff progressed in drafting the proposed zoning code amendment text for the BESS facilities, the main considerations that have been kept on top of mind included timing. I think we just kind of talked about that at the fire code update, which we anticipate to be available in July, and likely will include changes related to electrical energy storage systems. Federal and state regulations that have either been adopted or are in review at this time. And public safety of residences and businesses that may be located near a BESS facility. We also consider potential hazards. One of the main ones is in areas that are prone to severe fire. Safety measures for BESS installations and decommissioning protocols to ensure that at the end of life of these facilities that there's a way to restore to restore the area safely. Aesthetics and noise concerns, this is on top of mind as it relates to communities that may be located near these facilities. And also the ability to keep up with future demands for electricity as we are in a state where demand keeps increasing for electricity. And finally, feedback from the Planning Commission and groups that we have met with in the initial research process. In the next slide, I'll be reviewing the key feedback provided by the Planning Commission at the March study session and how the feedback was incorporated into the draft proposed and code text. One of the key regulatory feedback that the commissioners focused on during the initial study session was the appropriate separation distance between a BESS facility and nearby residences and community facilities. At the last study session, staff provided an example of the distance proposed by AB 303, which is still under review by the state. And that separation distance is over 2,000 feet. But with the feedback from the Planning Commission to ensure that we are looking at all available safety material as well as consulting with OCFA on separation distance that is appropriate, the staff proposed a 500 feet separation distance after considering that the County of Orange adopted fire code does not include specification for distance currently for battery energy storage facilities from other uses. It should be noted that OCFA reviews are conducted in a manner to ensure compliance with this adopted fire code. The County of San Diego has adopted interim fire protection guidelines for BESS facilities specifies a minimum 100 feet setback. from the property line to provide adequate distance for personnel, apparatus, and command to be safely positioned during a fire suppression operation in these facilities. The interim guidelines also include the ability to define appropriate setback distances through a dispersion analysis or some modeling. So that allows flexibility in making sure that where the siting of the facility may require a reduced or increased distance separation. The County of Los Angeles adopted fire code specifies a 10-foot separation from outdoor stationary storage battery systems to buildings, public ways, and lot lines. And best guidelines that have been provided and are available from the state of New York to their local jurisdictions, they do not actually specify separation distance, just that they adhere to the fire code. And then for Michigan, best zoning and planning guidelines that are provided from the state level to their local jurisdictions, they require 300 feet separation. So those are all the items that were considered, and also in hearing feedback from community too on this topic, staff has proposed a 500 feet separation distance for your consideration and comment feedback. The second key regulatory feedback from the Planning Commission was to include the ability for the Planning Commission to review and approve projects with varying needs to better cater to the needs of the community. In response, staff included a pathway in the proposed ordinance to allow for any request for deviation from development standards to be reviewed and approved by the Planning Commission through a use permit process. The third key regulatory feedback focused on looking into the possibility of financial assurance for decommissioning activities. In response, staff reviewed financial assurance information and proposed bonding as a requirement to guarantee funds will be available to carry out any decommissioning activities at the end of life of the facility, should the operator walk away. The fourth key regulatory feedback from the Planning Commission was a request to better identify economic benefits, to outline how communities may benefit from this requirement. In response, a sample list of economic benefits consistent with Public Resources Code has been included in the draft ordinance. Additional feedback from the Planning Commission and staff's considerations and responses are detailed in the staff report. Keep in mind that I'm only going over the key regulatory feedback today in this presentation. With that said, an additional key feedback we received at the last city session from the Planning Commission was a question of how the county's best facilities regulatory framework compares to other similar jurisdictions. While the staff report includes a more detailed comparison of the county's draft proposal and code text to the existing best regulatory standards of the County of Los Angeles, the County of San Diego, and the City of Menifee, the key highlights to note include the County of Los Angeles currently permits best facilities using existing electric distribution substation use category, and the County of LA's adopted fire code that includes requirements for stationary storage battery systems. The County of LA is currently working on updating the renewable energy ordinance in their zoning code to include best regulations, but as of today, a draft has not been made available from the County of LA. The County of San Diego currently permits best facilities using the existing minor or major impact utilities use categories, and the county's fire code, as well as the interim fire protection guidelines specific to best facilities that were developed by the local fire authority. The County of San Diego is currently working on developing land use planning development standards for best facilities. Again, a draft has not been made available as of today from the County of San Diego and their efforts. The City of Menifee, located near Riverside County, located in nearby Riverside County, is an early adopter of the Energy Storage Facilities Ordinance. The City of Menifee adopted their Energy Storage Facility Ordinance 2 years ago in April 2023. Comparison of our proposed draft zoning code amendment text and our regulatory framework is provided in the attachments of the staff report. So those are more details within there. Something to note is that the County of Orange is actually the first county in the state to release a draft proposed zoning code amendment text related to regulation of best facilities. Another feedback from Planning Commission during the last study session was a request to provide examples of operating best facilities that are existing. On the screen, you can see an example of an existing operating best facility sited near a substation. That you can see is located near an area of demand that includes residences and other community facilities such as school, library, medical center, and fire station. Based on feedback from the energy stakeholders and OCFA, best facilities are typically sited near substations, and substations are typically located near where the energy demand is. There are more examples of these types of existing operational best facilities that are provided in the staff report, but I'm only highlighting one of them today in this presentation for visual. So where do we go next on this project? Now that we have a first draft proposed zoning code amendment text available for review and gaining feedback from Planning Commission today on that draft, we will continue on the next steps of circling back with OCFA and our other key energy stakeholders and groups that we've met with initially to gain their feedback on the first draft of this text. And then finally, we anticipate presenting to the Planning Commission likely in August, in that July-August timeframe, to request recommendation to the Board of Supervisors. For today's study session for the General Plan Amendment GPA 2403 and Zoning Code Amendment CA 24-03 relating to the County of Orange Best Facilities Ordinance, we ask that the Planning Commission receive the staff report and public testimony and provide feedback to staff as appropriate. Thank you, Commissioners, for allowing me the time to present this to you today and to gain additional feedback as we make progress on this ordinance. For members of the public who would like to stay informed of this project, we have a website that's available, and I just wanted to make sure I have an advertisement up here to ensure that everyone knows that we can keep up to date with what we're doing on this online. And that concludes staff's presentation.
So before you step down, I do have a question, one of my three questions. Mm-hmm. I read in the register this morning, and Justin, you may know, it's either the PUC or Compass is doing like a study session or something to be conducted in the near future.
Yes.
So how does that work? And to follow that up, and will we have staff members attending that, whatever, and whenever that study session is? To stay informed and see what they have to share with us.
So the item that you're raising is related to NG and Compass Energy's development of a battery storage system within the city of San Juan Capistrano. The city of San Juan Capistrano has a incorporated city, does not follow county planning guidelines and laws. Further, that project is being processed through the state and not through the local land use agency. So that is it's a state process. The meeting itself is a second scoping session for the CEQA document itself. The county would not comment on that document as it's not part of our land use review and allow the city to provide those comments. So we won't be in attendance, but we are keeping up on the updates to it. But this, again, falls outside of the county process for it being located in an incorporated city. Secondly, it's not even being processed by that city. It's being processed actually by the state. And this is just an additional scoping session to receive comments for their CEQA document itself.
Okay, the reason I mentioned this is so new, right? So the more information we have, the better it is for us to you know, get information from that and make better judgments or decisions based on what we know, right?
Yes, so I have been involved with the state's review of their model ordinance as well as kind of updating on our processes. The state has not released a model ordinance yet, but that is anticipated to occur in the next few weeks. We will review. I'm scheduled to meet with a gentleman with the County of Solano with the state, and this is all being operated out of GoBiz, which is the kind of economic development component of the state government. And they're proceeding with their kind of model ordinances. So that's how we're gaining more feedback at a state level. The facilities themselves, we are reviewing and identifying whether or not our process would allow for or not allow for these types of facilities and understanding their review. But more of our coordination is with the GoBiz team and with their updates to the model ordinance through the states.
Okay, thank you. If you don't mind, I'll go with my second question. Is the distance of separation, the safety? I believe you mentioned that we started out with 2,000 feet, and then from all the different data we gathered from different jurisdictions, we came down to 500 feet, which to me is a drastic change. So do we have data, or do we have some calculations to support that, hey, we can go from, I think they started at like 0.6 of a mile and then came down to 2,000 feet, now it's 500 feet, which I'm assuming is still not finalized. But are there supporting data to say, hey, 500 feet is what we should go with, or is it just an average from all the different jurisdictions provided to us?
Well, there really isn't an ability for us to assess other jurisdictions' analysis of the separation because they don't necessarily exist. The 2,000 feet came from an Assembly Bill or Senate Bill, I can't remember which one, that was the number they were putting in. When we met with OCFA, the commentary we received was these facilities, if they're designed in a particular manner, are safe. And so their consideration of separation was more so based upon plume analysis, heat analysis, and other hazardous mitigation, rather than a defined setback. So, and that's somewhat equivalent to how the County of San Diego is reviewing them. We attempted to assert a straightforward number to help establish an objective criteria. We can look at this further, but based upon the information we see from OCFA, their determination was that the separation was almost unnecessary, provided the mitigation management plan provided a clear articulation that it would be safe in operation.
Okay. In my opinion, I think we're going to get some resistance from the residential areas being 500 feet away from these facilities, especially being so new. We're not sure exactly what the, you know, the the potential negative impacts would be. But anyway, you know, I'm not the expert on that. I'm just, from what I'm hearing, there will be, I think there will be pushback on that. And that leads me to my last question. I'll let the rest of the commission ask any question they may have. I know we talk about, hey, should the facility be shut down one day? We think about having them provide a bond to make sure that there's enough money for the cleanup, whatever that is. I know staff report even mentioned about ETSC, but I think I work with ETSC, so I think they deal more with landfill and not really, right, energy storage facilities, so I don't think they have jurisdiction, nor they want to deal with that. And I think in staff report, say the OCFA will be the final authority when it comes to cleanup efforts. And you can correct me, I'm wrong. I think that's what I gathered from the reports. But if we do ask the operator, which I call them, of this facility to provide a bond, is there a dollar amount for that bond?
So the dollar amount would emanate from that true cost of demolition based upon their demolition plan. So they would come in with a demolition plan saying this is how we're going to decommission the facility, and based upon our engineer's cost estimate, here's our rough estimation of how it's going, how much it's going to cost for that. That will be reviewed and validated, and then from that valuation would then generate the bond amount from it.
Okay, I think you may be saying something that I do have a concern with. So demolition of a facility is pretty much a fixed cost. It may be a dollar, maybe $1 billion, but the residue from the whatever chemical residue that the facility may leave behind, that's where the big money is. Mm-hmm. Environment cleanup, and I mean that industry, is the biggest cost that an operator or a developer has to deal with. Sometimes it will break a company or corporation because of it. So just give that some consideration. The hard infrastructure that has to be demolished, that's an easy part. So I just want to make sure that we give it some consideration when we determine that bond amount.
Of course, and actually the draft ordinance does require that the decommissioning plan include disposal of all solid and hazardous waste in accordance with local, state, and federal waste disposal guidelines. So that is one of the activities for which they would be required to bond on the front end.
Okay. But we still don't have that figure yet. It's still being considered.
Right. We
can't, and I'm sure it depends on the size of the facility.
Precisely.
Which is the tough part, right?
Precisely. That's why the number would be generated by the activities outlined in the decommissioning plan itself. And okay. You are correct that OCFA would be one of the reviewing and regulatory agencies
okay.
for that decommissioning.
Okay, thank you. Commissioners, I'm done with all my questions, please.
Thank you. First of all, really great job on the staff report and the analysis and setting it up in a kind of a question and answer format that made it really easy to follow and kind of mimicked what we discussed at the last meeting. So really, really good staff report. I'll pick up on Commissioner Ha's comment on the separation. And it looked as though when I, that there was a matrix that was in the, you could link, that was in the link. It's not a part of the test staff report here, but it looked as though that the 500 feet was appropriate and that the ability for the staff to either impose less restrictions or more restrictions, depending on the application, you maintain that right, is my understanding. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So I think that that is really giving us the opportunity to evaluate specifically each individual project. And 500 feet could be good, it may not be good, it may be something else. And so really, really good work all the way around. I got maybe a couple of other items, but I'll let my colleague, Commissioner Rice, go next. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know that we went through a lot of this at length last time, and I want to echo the accommodation for staff in putting this together and really addressing the feedback that we gave last time. And I am probably forgetting kind of a basic question. I know that this is considered new technology and all that. Do we have, is there an example out there in the world of one of these facilities failing, having some issue? I can't remember if we discussed that and yeah, I'll leave it at that.
So the most recent, I guess, example of a situation where there was an issue was up in the Central Coast. Moss Landing is the area.
That's right, I remember that.
And that is a battery energy storage system that was permitted to go into an enclosed building, having differing types of battery facilities, differing types of technology. And so the feedback we got in general was, hey, that's an outmoded technology. The industry has pivoted to these more standalone units that are enclosed in their own little kind of container buildings that sit autonomously so that you avoid heat issues, you would avoid the chain reaction potentially occurring from a fire affecting one unit to another, and then the structures themselves. And so really kind of the feedback from the industry was, here's how we've progressed into a safer model to these sorts of things, and that has been reflected in the ordinance itself, with not allowing them to go into enclosed buildings, having certain requirements for the plume analysis and hazardous mitigation analysis and things of that. I am not aware directly of one of these exact types of facilities failing, but it also could be just the byproduct of the emergent technology and transitioning away from what was in existence a few years ago. And when I say an older technology, I'm not talking decades old, I'm talking years old. And so this is somewhat of how it's progressed into where we are today. We've tried to take an ordinance that has a future-proofing ability to it to a degree, where rather than calling out specific technology as preferred over others, or calling out specific, really specific design requirements, we're really going into a, hey, here is what we need you to prove. Check these boxes. And if you check these boxes as they are evaluated by both the county's building official and then Orange County Fire Authority, now we can proceed in a safe manner in the regulatory permitting of these facilities. So it's we're not looking too much to the past enough to know what doesn't work, but going in the forward in the future is how can we keep up without having to revise this consistently, and really having that notion of, well, you're going to have to comply with the fire code and building code. You're going to need to have this analysis, that analysis. how can we tailor separation in a means that we can articulate to the public that this exact length or distance is appropriate? And it comes through good science and kind of that good technical work that then allows those subject matter experts in those fields to evaluate that work, make findings of recommendations to this, to the Planning Commission before an action is considered.
Okay. Do we know, it's probably somewhere, a linked from the website that I haven't looked at. For instance, when I'm looking at the photos of examples and what little I know of the subject, to, for instance, on do the plans, do you happen to know if they, it's appropriate, or do they include like automated fire suppression as a part of it, so that we're not 100% reliant on response times and things like that from fire authorities?
Yes, and those are kind of why they're in those enclosed containers themselves. I would just add the notion of fire suppression isn't fire extinguishing, so we're always going to have some reliance on response oriented. What typically fire suppression systems do is buy more time to get the actual apparatus on the site to fight the fire and extinguish the fire, but the suppression systems allow for more time for that to occur, and these types of facilities would have those suppressions. Systems that are automated and based upon certain types of detection of either heat, smoke, or some other cause of fire.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm wondering if that's possible and appropriate to have more automated things for. And when I say fire, also because you mentioned plumes, because then we're talking about obviously not damage concern from fire, but from whatever chemical plume may show up, and that's why, I don't know, maybe some kind of automated system might be appropriate. But I guess that hopefully the experts in the world are looking at those things.
And the plume analysis itself would help drive the separation of the facilities as well, because we don't want to create a plume environment that would affect a residential or other use without some means of capture or treating it, so that we do not create evacuation demands or potential other issues. So,
well, I could see if you had some kind of, water-based plume suppression, then you have to worry about where that water goes. Mm-hmm. And so it can be very complicated, but that's what people expect ahead of time.
Yeah, and a lot of that would be identified in the hazardous mitigation plan.
Okay.
That would identify, okay, based upon this design and taking into the existing environment in terms of the terrain, the weather patterns, things like that, how this facility would operate in a specific safe manner, meeting specific fire code requirements, and then would incorporate that suppression-oriented systems or other systems to reduce and eliminate some of those issues identified, so that they don't just go into the environment without that check beforehand. And typically we would get that hazardous mitigation review done post-entitlement, and then it would be part of a permitting process. What we're doing is putting that up front and saying, okay, OCFA, with whatever tools you have to review these, typically through the fire code, we're going to want a statement of finding that this facility is not posing adverse safety concerns. And that typical vehicle, again, is that hazardous mitigation plan, which they would review before an application was reviewed by the Planning Commission with those specific findings and recommendations made. So you have surety that this specific facility, as it's designed, meets certain fire code requirements, adequate suppression systems, and potential capturing systems for whatever it may be, and that OCFA feels comfortable with its installation and their ability to fight that fire itself.
Because, of course, we all want safe systems, and safe systems never fail.
Of course. I think the designer of the Titanic may have made comments alluding to that, and watertight doors, but no, and nothing will be perfect. Right, and as we get...
That's why we plan for the imperfect,
yes,
for the failures.
Exactly, and as situations occur and as technology becomes more studied and more implemented, we'll know better in the future how to regulate these facilities as we receive applications. And part of the use permit process may require updates to their facilities to comply with more current standards based upon our knowledge of what's working and not working.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So I think what Commissioner Wright's concern, and I'm kind of in a related business, but I think what, Justin, what you mentioned is when we actually gonna go through the plan check and issue whatever building permits, that's when, you know, we can ask for such thing as a work plan, how to mitigate potential runoff from, right, any kind of hazardous material, contaminated water from, you know, the fire suppression system, or even, you know, OCFA, you know, dealing with the fire. So I think that's pretty standard, isn't it, in our process?
To a degree, we are trying to front load it more to not the permitting phase, but the entitlement phase. And we would tie the environmental review of an application to require how and demonstrating how they would not produce adverse or significant impacts to the environment. So as part of the CEQA analysis, we would want to see what is the potential for soil contamination? What is your mitigation plan to avoid that if it does exist? And so we wouldn't allow that to go through until the permitting process. We'd want to see that more through as much as we can through the entitlement process. Now, during certain CEQA analysis, we'll say, well, this level of review, if following, like, say, an air quality management district program, will, if you go through that permitting process, will reduce an impact of less than significant. So that becomes the mitigation measure itself. Because at times, the entitlement process may not have a project that's been fully designed and engineered for construction purposes, as they wait to get some surety of land use approval before getting those levels of plans prepared. So as much information as we can get up front, we will, so we can answer some unknown questions. But if a process yields a result that would not create an impact, we would reference that process as either a condition of approval or mitigation measure to address it in the subsequent permitting phase.
I think you mentioned land use. I'll give you an example. If this proposed facility is on a hillside, mm-hmm. versus, let's say, flat ground, right, topography, then we would say, hey, potentially the runoff can come down the hillside and we gotta capture it by building some kind of containment system or some kind of drainage system into a filtration, right, device, stuff like that. So I think it's more general, but I would want to think that we would want that issue monitor and dealt with during the process from the proposed to the actual permit granted process.
Yeah, and that's what we would try to do, is get as much information at the appropriate stage, relying upon systems that exist to allow for further analysis and review post, so that there's a checks and balance, not just once, but twice, sure. and third. Because we look at this in a three-phase approach, right? You have your pre-planning and planning stage, where we have our entitlements and permitting, then we have the construction phase, but there are maybe four, then you have your operation phase, and then the closure phase. And each phase of that process needs to have a degree of oversight to ensure that, you know, as designed, it's appropriate, as built, it's still safe, in operation, it's still safe, and once it leaves operational use or life, that site is returned to a safe condition.
Okay. Commissioner Barber, I think you have more.
I really appreciate the discussion, and it sounds like that we have, with the use permit process, we're going to be able to evaluate all those checks and balances as the project goes through. So thank you very much for that. A couple of questions. One is, do we think the timeline that we have on the ordinance, I can't remember if it was a 9-month moratorium, or whatever it is, but are we still operating within the limits of that timeline, and or do we expect to be able to meet that timeline?
Yes, there was an initial moratorium and then a second moratorium that extended through the end of the calendar year.
Okay.
With the goal of having a ordinance adopted in advance of that and in enough time to become effective. So we're working towards that. We anticipate having public hearings probably in August before the Planning Commission, public hearings in October that would allow for that implementation period at the end of the year.
Is it like a 60 or 90 day once it's approved by the board, is it?
What is it, is it 45?
45 day?
30.
30.
30 day, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's helpful. I think it was at the last meeting that we had, or first meeting, that we had quite a few representatives here from the utility companies, is that right?
Yes, I think they're both SDG and SDE here.
All right, well, welcome back. I'm sure we'll get to your comments, but just wanted to emphasize that whatever we're doing in terms of public outreach and noticing and the website and everything else, that if we still have names of people that have actually spent the time to be here, to make sure they get noticed and that they know where to look on the website for the staff reports, et cetera, so.
Yes, we have contained a continually growing interested parties list of individuals. In advance of this meeting, we did send draft copies of the agenda, or links to the agenda item, and notice that the item would be considered. This is not a notice public hearing, but to create a actual public outreach process, we want to continue this. That's also why we came back for a second study session. The first study session was more theoretical discussion. Now we have an actual ordinance that we can implement. Now let's take that next round and process these comments that we received both here and as we may receive subsequent by interested parties, so that when we come back to you in August with the kind of final draft that's with a recommendation to go to the board, we have an ability to say this has been reviewed by interested parties.
Outstanding job by everybody. Thank you.
Okay, with that in mind, we'll open the public comment session. I don't know if anybody wants to come up.
Hey, Commission, my name is Eric Wigan. I'm Public Affairs Manager for San Diego Gas and Electric. Apologize for my more casual attire. I'm also a director for the Orange County Water District, and we own a significant amount of property behind Prado Dam, and we are meeting with the city of San Clemente today to go over some of the sand that we have over there. It's kind of messy and playing around in sand, so. But I appreciate the opportunity to come and speak. Appreciate county staff for working with this. Great questions answered, or asked and answered by staff. I think we might have a little concern with the setback of the 500 feet. I think we'd want to carry on some conversation about how we do it in San Diego. Being San Diego Gas and Electric, we have several facilities, best facilities that exist currently. And as we had discussed, there was a 100 feet setback. So maybe some further discussion would be great on that. Our worry is that we don't want to chill the industry. We recognize that the industry works well with best facilities. July and August of last year was our biggest energy producing months in history for SDG&E. And if it weren't for the best facilities, we would have had rolling brownouts throughout the course of our service territory. So we recognize that this is a really important key component of the energizing and electrification that exists in the state of California, with further and further demand towards that a policy goal that the state of California is putting on us. So we just want to make sure that we don't chill the industry, that we promote best facilities, but do it in a responsible manner. And working with OCFA, I think, is an important tool. We're on the right page here. We want to be responsive to that, but we want to make sure, because there's not a really one size fits all. It's uniquely shaped for that specific community of best facilities. So one doesn't just work in Ladera, that might work in Coto, that might work in San Clemente, that might work in a different part of the territory. So we want to be responsive to that. But we appreciate being able to work back and forth with this process, and hope that we can come to something that works best for the utilities and for the residents and for the county. So thank you for your time.
Quick question, if I may.
Yeah.
Does the language that that's currently in the staff recommendation, it's at 500 feet, but it gives the ability of discretion to go lower or more if needed, that language, that flexibility, does that work for SDG&E?
We haven't come to a conclusion yet as to what works best for us as far as that. Obviously, San Diego has that 100 foot, so I think we would prefer it to kind of mirror what San Diego is. But you know, I think we would be open to discussion on that. You know, depends on that. Again, that one size fits all approach might not work for certain areas that work for others. But I think our team really would need a little bit more time to probably dig into what specific setback would work best for them.
It kind of seems like the recommendation is not a one size fits all. It's sort of customizable depending on the individual project, if I'm understanding that correctly.
We start with a number and then allow for there to be some, not subjective, but some additional analysis through a use permit process to get to a smaller setback.
Right.
To be perfectly candid, that was one of my initial comments, was the separation distance and how we would strike the balance of public concerns with these facilities being located too close to certain uses, but then also being addressing and honest with how these facilities need and where they need to operate and be located and trying to figure that out. So the tailored approach is probably a better approach and we'll, if not already there, work towards getting to and then working with the two energy providers to see if does that kind of fit into what they see as appropriate.
Okay. And since this ordinance is the first in California, I think, you know, we just want to make sure that it's not too extreme just based on the technology that will continue to improve, especially on that worry and risk about fire. There's constantly new technology that's coming out on this. So it could also, an ordinance could include specific technologies as well too, as those improve. It's just a suggestion that maybe technology could be looked into as what the parameters and the requirements are. But again, it's an evolving tool that we know is going to be important to the future of the state.
Thank you, appreciate being here.
Hold on one second. So is our goal here to set some kind of general guideline or a site specific will dictate the distance maybe, as I mentioned, right?
We're going to assert more of a generic threshold that allows for there to be additional documentation of information that may say, hey, you know, giving your example of the hillside area, maybe because of the fire concerns in that type of topography, OCFA is going to want a greater separation. Or it could be that the facility is designed in such a way and using certain technology that that distance of 500 feet is actually more onerous than is necessary and gives them a more flexible approach to working at a lesser distance.
Okay, thank you.
And Kelly Lee is with Southern California Edison, kind of my counterpart in Orange County has two different territories. Everything from Laguna Hills South is SDG&E, and then the rest of the entire county is Edison. But you know, we talk a lot about this, and it's great that staff is allowing us to have some input into this process, and we appreciate the commission's questions and interest in this.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Anybody else that want to come up?
Thank you, commissioners, for the opportunity to engage Kelly Lee, Government Relations Manager of Southern California Edison. We were given this draft on Wednesday before a holiday weekend with many of our subject matter experts out in town. We're going to need a little bit more time. I understand from the timeline that they were going to engage key energy stakeholders in the upcoming month, and so we look forward to entertaining that conversation. I have similar comments to Eric, and we have similar concerns just in the preliminary conversations with the people that I was able to engage internally. We are looking forward to the continued discussion and the partnership as we kind of move towards this together. Our commitment and our mutual partnership towards safety and resilience and reliability and affordability and all of those things as development is continuing in our communities. I just came back from a meeting in Riverside where they're going to have a water park within their, you know, community in the county and the city, and that's looking at 15 megawatts. So they have a transmission project that's looking at, you know, being constructed soon that will bring additional, you know, power to that community. That additional infrastructure in Riverside is necessary to meet the future needs of the community there. The infrastructure in Edison service territory is necessary to build and to meet the needs of our future communities and the capacity of our customers. So we want to make sure that we are mindful, that we are intentional in our approach, and we are you know, looking forward to further engagement on this discussion as we move forward.
Thank you. Do we have anybody else? If not, I'll close the public comment session. Commissioner, do I get a motion from somebody here?
This is a receiving file item.
Oh, okay. Oh, we don't need to make, okay. We don't have to vote.
Yeah, there's nothing actionable.
I would just mention, Mr. Chairman, that we're talking about flexibility and subjectivity, which sounds really great, but I hope county council will think about this and make sure that we're not inviting lawsuits, you know, for staff and everything. When you have flexibility and you don't have objective standards, I don't know, and staff can do this and do that, I don't know, or that hopefully we'll consider that and not be setting a little landmine for ourselves in the future. Thank you.
We're certainly reviewing and trying to avoid that.
So, Justin, before I close out the item, can you give us some dates, like what's next on for this particular item?
We do not have any defined dates per se, as much as we do have expected or anticipated public review and public comment periods. We're not anticipating coming back to the Planning Commission until August. So that'll give us about a month and a half, 2 months to get further dialogue with the interested stakeholders. This was kind of our kickoff in this comment review process, and so we're looking at August for that public hearing, and then moving to into the fall in October for those public hearings as well with the board offices. We have also provided this ordinance to the board offices in advance for releasing it to the public for their review. So once we get comments back from their staff, we'll look to incorporate that as well.
Okay.
But really, we have an agenda item, so it appears to be the conclusion of something. But this is more of a beginning of a dialogue process that gives us a formal kickoff to that. And the actual conclusion would be the actual public hearing of the ordinance itself, which is coming in August.
Okay. So I forgot the name, but the representative from Edison, right? If you want to share some comments or some, certainly reach out to staff and let them know, you know, what you have to share with us, and we certainly welcome your comments. Okay, with that in mind, then we'll go to the next item, which is executive officer updates.
I don't have much. We are anticipating another public hearing before July. So as soon as we get better information, we'll push that out. And then I think the first meeting in July will be dark.
Okay.
And perhaps the second as well.
Okay. So county council, I know you just sitting in this one and maybe the next one. So do you have any updates?
I do not. I will check in with your regular county council and let you know at the next meeting if there are any updates, but otherwise I will see you all at the next meeting.
Okay, I knew it was kind of unfair to ask, but I have to ask. It seems you have to ask county council.
We'll count on an update next meeting.
Okay, I'll have something for you.
Mr. Chairman, on that, if I'm not mistaken, did I see several weeks ago that there was an appellate court decision on sober living ordinances? Maybe we can check in with county council to see if that's going to affect us, because at the time, whenever that was, 2 years ago, 3 years ago,
that's right,
it was a big deal.
I believe it's already affected us. I say that, and if it's, there is, are you referring to the court case with the city of Costa Mesa?
I think so, and it was upholding their regulations,
yes,
if I'm not mistaken.
So how that affected us, it was directly with our housing element. Initially, we received guidance from HCD that our programs were not legal or not following their guidelines. That court case came out. We had direction from two board offices to revise the policy program that more overtly communicated that we would repeal those functions. And now once we got that court case findings or the decision, we amended that to have a more open-ended discourse and not as direct as we will repeal and replace, but we'll review and find those issues to see if what is compatible and non-compatible with the HCD's guidelines and now this court case. And so I believe that work is carrying through to the currently with our housing element consultants and then working with HCD staff as well.
That's correct. Yeah, and that was the City of Costa Mesa case. It was a federal court case upholding their ordinances as legal, so it wasn't a direct, it wasn't directly in relation to their housing element. It was a federal constitutional challenge, and the Federal Appeals Court found that their ordinance was legal. It was not unconstitutional. It didn't facially discriminate. I don't recall if there was an as-applied challenge included in that. But from that, it has sort of spurred a larger discussion with HCD about how they are interpreting that case in relation to their guidance to cities and counties, which previously said you cannot have these kinds of restrictive sober living home ordinances. So we're continuing to have that discussion, and we're hopeful that we will have a resolution to that by the next housing element cycle. But for the time being, the program actually included in our housing element is more that we would review our sober living home ordinance in the context of more current legal guidance and would revise if necessary.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments from the commission?
Yeah, just a quick comment on the fire zone mapping. Just FYI, we've done a little bit of work on behalf of the organization I work with and high fire zones. And so when the new maps came out, was maybe 2 months ago, we started looking very carefully at those, and I discovered that I'm now in a very high fire zone, my house. when previously was not. Just encourage everybody out there in the public to check those maps, because they did change, and sometimes you can't make any sense of why they changed and why I'm in a high fire zone now, and the area that's right down the slope from me is in just a regular fire zone and not a very high fire zone. So it's just a little bit perplexing, but should all kind of check those maps if we think that there's a, if we're in the unincorporated area, I think some of the, most of the commission is, so.
Yeah. Where's the detailed map that we can look? I saw the slide and it
projects,
under OC Public Works, current projects, districts.
Okay. Or just Google high fire zone maps, and it'll come up as a viewer, so you can really go right in detail. Yeah.
And that's through the state.
Through the state.
Right. You can enter in an address, and it'll zone right into that, and with a dropout menu to say whether or not you're in a zone and what zone you're in. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's definitely going to affect the ability to get QA insurance nowadays, right? Which is a big issue, right? And the costs are just horrendous now, so.
Yes.
The only thing I want to share with the staff and commissions, I'll be gone most of August, so I know that we go in dark mid to late July, but I will let Marissa know my actual schedule when I have it, which should be next week, but I'm pretty sure will not be available, so Commissioner Rice, hopefully you can fill in for me.
We'll see. I've got to check my, I know I'm town the early part of August at least, so I'll check.
Okay, and then
you guys can just come in through a remote.
When it's daytime here, it's nighttime over there, so I don't know how to figure that out just yet. But
Is that legal? Is that still legal? Are we under the COVID rules where we can?
It is still legal in certain circumstances, but there are hoops you have to jump through.
Okay. Well, if I have to hop on because you're gone or something, Commissioner Bartlett, I'm sure you can fill in for us as well, so we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
All right. Other than that, public comments. Do we have any public comments? That's it. So meeting's adjourned. Thank you very much. Great job, staff. Appreciate it.